Mrs. Roosevelt loved Lorena Hicks for many reasons, but it didn't hurt that such a relationship was considered a subversive act with her well-born family. Eleanor and Hicks, next on Through the Eyes of Women. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. Hi, my name is Brenda Starr, and I'm your host today for Through the Eyes of Women, and my guest is writer Susan Quinn. Some of her work has been for the New York Times Magazine, Atlantic Monthly, Boston Globe Magazine, Ms. Magazine, and others, and has published books on science and medicine, the improvisation of Depression-era artworks, and she's been honored with the Penn Award and several other distinctions for her biography of renowned psychoanalyst Karen Horney and her biography of Marie Curie, one of the best science and tech books. That book has been translated into 9 languages. She's here today to join us about her new book, Eleanor and Hicks, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. Susan Quinn, welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So first of all, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself. I tried to laud your writing history.
Well, I started out as a daily newspaper writer, and that's one of the reasons I really enjoyed this story, because one of the characters, Lorena Hickok, is a news reporter. So I started out as a news reporter, and then I got tired of having to churn out articles in a hurry and sort of superficially, and that's when I turned to biography. And I've been writing a biography pretty much focused on strong women, I would say. My first was Karen Horney, whom you mentioned, who took issue with a lot of Freud's ideas about women and about women's sexuality and the whole penis envy thing, which she disagreed with. She was one of the first to question some of those theories. And then another strong woman was Marie Curie, discoverer of radioactivity. Now here I am with these two, Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt. And this is a different kind of challenge, of course, because it's about not one but two women and telling their stories and really telling the story of their relationship and of the love affair. So that's been a really interesting journey for me.
Well, you have picked very strong women to write about, as you said. And I think you must be a very strong woman yourself in order to do that. But why Eleanor Roosevelt and Lorena Hickok?
Well, Eleanor Roosevelt and Lorena Hickok, it's a great story, and it's one that's been around. It's been out there. I mean, a lot of us kind of knew about it a little bit, but not a lot. And the kind of basis of the story, a really big part of the background of the story, is these letters that they exchanged. Over their lifetime, they exchanged well over 3,000 letters. They wrote to each other during the intense period of their relationship. They wrote to each other every day or even twice a day when they were apart. And the letters are wonderful. And then the lucky thing that happened was that Eleanor gave her side of the correspondence to Lorena Hickok. So both sides of the correspondence are there. And it's been out there, the letters and the relationship have been known about and written about, but at first the story was really the story of Lorena Hickok being in love with Eleanor Roosevelt and not with Eleanor Roosevelt loving her back. And earlier versions of it really tried to protect Eleanor from this scandalous idea that she actually was in love with a woman. But nowadays, it seemed like we could talk about it differently and really embrace and celebrate this relationship, because it was very, very important for Eleanor and Lorena Hickok, who everybody called Hick. It was a really critical relationship that changed their lives forever, and so that was the reason I wanted to tell it again.
How did you get access to the letters? I want to say your book is so well written. It reads so well. It's the stories you include, not only their love letters, but the history that was going on right now and in at that moment and in the world. And you blend those so beautifully. But how did you get access to all those letters?
Well, they're there at the Franklin Roosevelt Library, and not the originals, of course, which are locked away, but photocopies of all of them. And I read all of them, all 3,000 plus, of course, and was able to photocopy the photocopies. Wasn't difficult. The difficult part is, of course, piecing together the whole story. And then, as you said, this story takes place in the midst of these momentous events of the 20th century, you know, first the Great Depression and then the war. And so their relationship is happening with all this these world events happening at the same time, and it was a challenge to weave the story into the bigger story.
Well, you did it really well, I want to tell you.
Thank you.
I think you incorporate other things from, Eleanor was a very prolific writer as well. She had her daily columns. And
that's a good point. And she wrote a lot. And she wrote her My Day column. And, of course, Hick was a journalist. And she not only wrote these letters, but she wrote these wonderful reports describing in detail and very vividly what was going on out in the field and during the Great Depression. There were a lot of sources besides the letters.
And the photos, how did you come across those? There's lovely photos in here.
I went to Minneapolis, which is where Lorena Hickok became a reporter, really. She worked for quite a few years at the Minneapolis Tribune. So I was able to get these pictures of her that actually few people had seen before, including one of her in these overalls, posing with the engineers, the train engineers in front of a big train engine. It's just a great photograph and sort of epitomizes who she was. She was this really tough, fearless reporter who, so unlike Eleanor in her style, you know, she swore and she drank and she smoked and she was very emotional and full of bombast about things and got very indignant about things and cared deeply. And Eleanor did too, but Eleanor, of course, was very restrained. So they were an interesting combination and very different personalities.
You write that Hick's attire was corduroy riding breeches, plaid shirts, and boots from L.L. Bean. She'd fit in well right now.
Yes. Oh, yes, where you live, she would fit in, absolutely.
You also write that Eleanor's grandmother had taught her that it was unseemly to appear in the public eye. So I was wondering, how did she get used to that?
Slowly. You know, Eleanor Roosevelt changed so much over her lifetime, over her adult lifetime. You know, when she got married, she was very sort of timid and very, very ladylike. She didn't even think, she wasn't sure she believed that women should get the vote even when she first got married. She wouldn't play cards because she'd been raised to think that that was something ladies didn't do. And she wouldn't talk to the press. But then, of course, as the governor's wife, she began to talk more. And then she really changed after she discovered that Franklin was having an affair. This was after she'd had five children with Franklin. And in 1918, she discovered that he was having an affair with her secretary. And it was just a devastating discovery. And they even talked about divorce, decided against it. But it changed the relationship. And she began to forge this independent path for herself. And that was when she began to get involved in politics. She began to make friends with a lot of the women in politics, many of whom were actually lesbians in lifetime relationships. Her closest friends were Nan and Marion. And with them, she built this cottage, Valkill, which was an independent little cottage away from the big house where Franklin and his mother lived. So she started to have these friends, political friends. She began to teach. She began to write. So that was all part of the evolution. And by the time she met Hick in 1932, and Hick began covering her during FDR's first campaign, she was already very engaged in politics and just very different than she had been as a young woman.
There's a lovely picture in the book that can be from in our area here, the Russian River area.
It's so beautiful there. My husband was an intern at Highland Alameda in Oakland, and our weekends when we had them, we would go to the Russian River. It was just the most beautiful place.
And don't you think Eleanor and her friends would drive up in their cars if they were in the same space as you were and drive up to the Russian River? Marion Dickerman, Nancy Cook, as you mentioned, and Marion's mm-hmm. sister Peggy. The four of them just look like, oh, yes, they're just having a Russian River outing.
And you
mentioned that she really endeared herself to very strong women. She was a very independent woman.
And they to her, yeah. It was very important to her. She learned there were these women, and many of them, you know, Eleanor, because she came from the upper classes, didn't go to college. Her family felt that it would really interfere with her ability to make a good match if she went to college, and that was a view of you know, many upper-class families at the time. She would have loved to go to one of the women's colleges, but most of these women who became her friends were college graduates who'd gone to the, you know, the Seven Sisters schools and who were quite independent, and she learned from them. I think the picture that you may be referring to is the one where they're all wearing knickers.
Yes.
Which was in itself pretty shocking.
I know.
At the time.
Very
and,
shocking.
And Eleanor and Hick, during the intense period of their relationship, which lasted about 4 or 5 years, the thing they loved to do the most was to get into Eleanor's roadster and drive away into the country and go on outings for several weeks at a time, because that was a way they could not be seen or bothered and had privacy and could be together and be intimate. They would have left the Russian River. They did try to have a little vacation out west in California, but by the time that happened, Eleanor had become so famous that it was really, really hard for them to be anonymous.
They did drive from San Francisco up to Bend, Oregon, and I think, oh, they passed by us here.
Yeah, that's right.
You mentioned the Seven Sister Colleges. Now, Hyde Park is very close to Poughkeepsie, where Vassar is, mm-hmm. and I imagine that there was a lot of intellectual women, a lot of conversation that she would have that maybe Nancy and Marion would bring in, and as well as perhaps co-eds from Vassar. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Eleanor later became involved with Vassar, I mean, on the board and doing things there. And then she had other friends in the village. Greenwich Village was the center of intellectual foment. And so she had an apartment there, and the apartment was in the building of another couple who were her friends. And then there were several other couples around, women couples who were involved in Democratic politics and who had apartments in the village. And so she was surrounded by these women. It's one of the reasons, I think, that her falling in love with Hick and having an intimate relationship was not so surprising. Kind of natural and in some ways easier because she was part of this little world.
It reminded me of the Bloomsbury group in London so much when I was reading the book. You know, Willa Cather and her partner. I mean, like I said, it's just so rich with detail and very juicy that way, Susan. Now, let's talk about the two women growing up. We talk about Eleanor coming from, obviously, her cousin was Theodore Roosevelt. And there was that strict family background. But what about Hick?
Well, they were so different, you know, I mean, in their upbringing and in their past. Aunt Hick grew up, her father was really a violent man and quite abusive, and especially sort of focused on her. And the family traveled from one little town to the next in Wisconsin and then the Dakotas. And he was always trying to make it in these towns, and then he wouldn't, and they'd move on. And by the time she was 14, her mother died when she was 13, and he remarried and kicked her out. So from 14 on, Hick was on her own, working as a maid, as a girl, a hired girl, as she was called then, in other people's houses, and barely making it through high school. And then she got really rescued by an aunt who insisted that she go back to school. And so she did graduate from high school and then tried college, didn't succeed at that. She was an awkward sort of, not fat exactly, but big kind of girl, tried to get into a sorority at college. And when that failed, she left. I think that was quite devastating to her. So then she really found herself when she started working in newspapers, first in Milwaukee and then Minneapolis. She became very successful at that, working her way up from the women's page to writing serious news, and finally getting a job at the Associated Press in New York at one of the very few women working at that top level in journalism then. You know, this is a self-made woman who clearly, she loved to read, and she was clearly very smart. And she was a real autodidact who knew a tremendous amount. And I was so impressed in reading her letters. It's kind of ironic that Eleanor, who had this upper-class background, writes almost illegibly. Hick writes beautiful hand, always in ink, and extremely clear, and everything is perfect. The punctuation, the spelling, everything. I mean, and it's really quite remarkable.
She loved language. You could tell she loved language.
Yes, absolutely. Just an amazingly smart and accomplished person, given the background that she'd had. So that was a big contrast. The one thing that bound them, I think, in a really important way was they both felt that they'd been very unhappy in childhood. They had been unhappy in childhood. Eleanor had a mother who told her she'd never make it in society and who died when she was quite young. And then her father, whom she adored, died of alcoholism when she was only 10. So Eleanor was raised by a very cold, strict Victorian grandmother in a great big mansion with servants and a French governess whom she hated. And so she felt very alone as a child. And in that way, she and Hick connected.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Through the Eyes of Women here on KHSU. I'm your host, Brenda Starr, and my guest is author Susan Quinn, whose latest release is Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. Now, Lorena Hickok had a propensity to not only get the story, but she could read people and she could get very emotional. And you talk about when she first, she was assigned to do a story on the First Lady after the election, and she could tell her unhappiness. And from there, they started that relationship that they had.
Yeah, and Hick was one of the few who kind of figured out that Eleanor wasn't thrilled about being First Lady. At first, she wasn't even sure she wanted to cover Eleanor because she thought she didn't want to get stuck on the women's pages. But she pretty quickly realized that Eleanor was not the usual First Lady and that it was going to be really interesting. So yeah, the fact that she empathized with her was really important. And then, of course, followed her everywhere and traveled with her on trains up and down all over New York State and everywhere else. And so they spent a lot of time together. And slowly, Eleanor began to trust Hick and confide in her. That's when things changed from being a professional relationship into being a really love relationship.
And Hick could see that use the phrase person versus personage.
Mm-hmm. And that was the big conflict for Lorena Hick, because she was truly in love with Eleanor, and Eleanor was the love of her life. And Eleanor really loved Hick, too, but Eleanor was somebody who loved a lot of people and who was loved by a lot of people and liked to have a lot of people around and was not going to ever be somebody's one and only and exclude others. So after a while, it became harder and harder for Hick because she felt that, as she told Eleanor, that the problem is that you become a personage. And I admire the personage very much, but I love the person. And, you know, that's the part that I would like to have more of. And it was true. And partly a lot thanks to Hick. Hick encouraged Eleanor to have this column, My Day, and also to have these all-women press conferences, which made her, well, first of all, it really meant that news organizations had to hire women, and these women then reported very sympathetically about Eleanor. And so the result of all that was that Eleanor became increasingly famous and both reviled by some but loved by many. And everywhere she went, there would be crowds. And so it was just for her to have this exclusive relationship, it just wouldn't work. And that was when Hick said, the problem is you become this personage. I admire the personage, but I love the person.
Well, you said that Eleanor once said that she still had to work on her own salvation. Do you think that was part of it, her quest for finding her own self-identity, and maybe couldn't get as deep as she might want to be because there was always something else on the horizon?
That is true, that she was always working on herself, it's true, and always developing, you know, and that was her great strength. But it was also, there was a kind of restlessness, I think, about Eleanor that meant that she wasn't going to probably settle down into one single relationship. There was a way in which the kind of depth of having only one person, I think it would have been hard for her, except for with Hick for this brief time, about 4 or 5 years, that the other one was the most important person for them when Eleanor really was focused on Hick and really in love with Hick and vice versa. And during those years, I think they were the one person for each other. But for most of her life, Eleanor was involved in relationships with men, and the men were usually involved with someone else as well. Repeatedly, there was a younger man, a young radical named Joe Lash, whom she was very attracted to, and he to her, but he was also in the middle of pursuing another woman who he married. And Eleanor was kind of playing matchmaker and helping out with that at the same time that she was kind of in love with him. And the same thing happened again later with a Russian-born Jewish doctor whom she adored, named David Gurevich, and she wound up living with him and his wife. And she lived on one floor, and they lived on the other floor. And yet, as she said, he was the love of her life. So this was something sort of mysterious for me and interesting, that in general, Eleanor's relationships were were triangular.
The triangulation chips.
Yeah, and even with the women, you know, with Nan and Marion, and with whom she was so close, and had this, they built the cottage together, and they developed this whole little cottage industry together in Hyde Park at Valkill. So once again, and Nan and Marion were a couple, were partners for life, and Eleanor was the third.
Well, the triangulation ships of the Depression alone, even amongst her children and relatives, it was a lot to read. I was very captured by that. Also, their relationship changed over the course of the years. Now, Hick had a room at the White House for probably, 13 years on and off?
Pretty much the whole time that FDR was in the White House, she had a room there.
And her profession changed a lot. I think her relationship with Eleanor obviously changed. She no longer became an AP reporter. She started writing stories. Eleanor was getting work for her. As the relationship progressed and then degressed, there was always that consistency that Eleanor wanted to give her hand up, knowing what a wonderful writer she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the relationship, the job situation for Hick was complicated by the relationship, because once she knew secrets, and there were a lot of secrets, I mean, the Roosevelt family had many, you know, not just that affair, and there were FDR's other flirtations, and there was a brother who, Eleanor's brother, who was an alcoholic, and all the children had multiple problems. So all that was going on, and Hick knew more and more, and Eleanor confided in her, and the result of that was that it became really impossible for her to continue working as a reporter for the AP, because she was being pressured by them, her bosses, to tell more and more, and she was increasingly loyal to Eleanor. And so the result of that was that she decided she had to leave. And Eleanor, at that point, found a job for her with the Roosevelt administration. So that was a big change, and it meant Hick's giving up being a reporter, which, as she said, was the only job she was really ever good at. So in some ways, it was a momentous decision, and not the greatest decision for Hick's future, in a way. But then she went on to do this work for the Roosevelt administration, and to live in the White House and to be very connected to Eleanor through all those years of the Roosevelt presidency. And she always said that she would not have changed that for anything, that was the most important thing in her life.
Well, speaking of the most important thing in someone's life, throughout all those decades, you write that Hick may have been the only one of Eleanor's deep attachments who loved her above all others. That is so sweet and tender, and really characterizes this relationship that changed from decade to decade, from all these historical aspects of the world, wars. I found that very poignant.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you kind of came away from all this as well, is that this was one of her deep attachments who really loved her above all others?
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, Hick's life after the White House, after FDR dies, doesn't go so well. At that point, she and Eleanor were friends, but no longer lovers, no longer intimate friends. So she went off to live in a little cottage on Long Island, which she loved, and tried to make a life for herself, a living for herself as a writer. But she became increasingly isolated there, you know, except for her beloved dog. She always had a dog that she adored, but she became more and more of a loner, and she wasn't really making it as a freelance writer. And meanwhile, Eleanor was just taking off. After Franklin Roosevelt died, she went to work for President Harry Truman and traveled all over Europe working on the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and the UN, and then meeting world leaders and becoming really, as Harry Truman said, first lady of the world, one of them being world famous and the other being increasingly desperate, until at some point Eleanor heard that Hick didn't have enough to pay the rent or put food on the table, and she sent her chauffeur to come and get Hick and bring her to Hyde Park and rescue her, really. So Hick spent her final years in Hyde Park near where Eleanor lived. But she did eventually manage to start making a decent living writing books for young adults. She saw Eleanor quite regularly up until the end. So it was a big, poignant contrast between the two lives and the direction that they take in the later years.
Susan Quinn, I want to thank you so much for writing this wonderful, wonderful book. It's fascinating. It's unique. I love reading it. It just reads through and all the history. And there's these love stories in between Eleanor and Hick, the love affair that shaped a first lady. And it's by Penguin Press. I want to thank you so much for appearing on Through the Eyes of Women today. And I wish you much success with the book.
Well, thank you very much, Brenda.
I did love the book.
Oh, thank you.
Alrighty.
I'm glad you did.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Brenda Starr, and I've been speaking with author Susan Quinn about her latest book, Eleanor and Hick, The Love Affair That Shaped a First Lady. For more information, you can visit SusanQuinnBooks.com. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Jessica Eden, and to the entire Through the Eyes of Women team. To listen to this program again, visit our blog at KHSUwomen.com, where you can also learn more about the show and post listener comments. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.